Welcome to Hormone Health Podcast, brought to you by Georgia Hartman and Chloe Sheehan.
This podcast is an extension of Hormone Health Studio, which is our naturopathic clinic based here in Newcastle and online.
We're just two naturopaths who love a laugh, coffee, croissants, and conversations about real people with real health concerns.
Nothing's off limits. We're here to educate you on what's happening in your body, share emerging research, and debunk buried health misconceptions.
So sit back and let us do the talking.
So it's our first day working from home.
I know. Don't you feel a little bit naked?
And we're already like, hey, let's catch up.
I know. We're gonna have to get used to it. I think the biggest thing is if everyone is remote, it's like trying to keep the culture and making sure that everyone's okay. And it's probably just you and I because the others have been doing this for months. So they're probably fine.
We'll have to still go on our try dates.
I know. We're going to save so much money because all we do was go to the clinic and then go out and get chai.
I've already had a lunch crisis.
What'd you have?
Just stupid leftovers.
Yeah, it's a bit boring, isn't it?
Chicken and salad. It's no toasted sandwich.
Those toasted sandwiches were good.
Yeah. Anyway, my little update this week is that Will and I attended a calm birth course over the weekend.
How was it? A two-day intensive?
Yeah. It was 9 to 4 Saturday and Sunday, and it was amazing. I really, really loved it, and I highly recommend for anybody who is currently pregnant or who is either pregnant with their second, third, or wanting more education. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Give us a breakdown, because I did hypnobirthing when I was pregnant with Otto, so I'm sure they're quite similar in the way that they're structured. Was the first day more about teaching you about different stages of labor and birth?
The first day was more sort of talking about what constitutes a calm birth, and really that could be any level of intervention, just as long as you're feeling aware and prepared, and as long as you're not feeling as though it's out of your control. And so she spoke a lot about that, and then also the different trend, like the different stages of labor. And she, like the way that the content was given, it was so informative, but it was also funny, and it was a perfect balance of also including the birth partner as well, because Will was just lapping up that information.
Was he? Yeah, I was going to say, how did he go? What did he have to say?
Because I felt like he was, you know, for the birth partner, they're sort of like, okay, well, what do I do? You know, like, how can I be involved? This is just as much their baby's birthday as it is ours. And so it's like, how can they be involved, and how can they help in that situation? And Maya, who was the course coordinator or educator, she made sure that they felt like they knew exactly what they needed to do in terms of I think she explained it like they're your biggest cheerleader on the day.
Yeah, that's well put. And they play such a big role. It's you think that they don't. But I remember Stephen, he probably got more out of the hypnobirthing. No, that's probably not true. He probably equally got a great amount out of our hypnobirthing course, which kind of shocked both of us come birth. Like, he played a huge role.
Will even said at the end of the 2 days, he's like, I really enjoyed that.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah, and it was like we were sort of like not back at school, but we were like giggly, and it was like it's like a day out meeting different people. And I think those sorts of things, they have to be interactive, they have to be funny, they have to, you know, there's a lot of sort of talk about different styles of birth. And I feel like we left and we were saying, like, we feel excited for me to give birth.
And that's how it should be. I think people are so nervous about pain or, you know, whatever the fears are that come up around labor and birth. But the more education you have, the more confident and the more calm you'll go. You know, it's probably, it's it's named appropriately, isn't it? Calm birth, because yeah, you head into it in such a different headspace.
Before I was stress birth, and now I'm calm birth. Anyway, I highly recommend it for people who are, you know, there's so many different courses out there, and the Calm Birth courses are accredited with state hospitals in New South Wales. And so, of course, it's up to people if they wanted to go, but I highly recommend it.
Amazing. So glad you had a good time. So today, because this podcast isn't all about you, today we are going to talk about UTIs, urinary tract infections. And I don't know about you, Chloe, but I see a lot of UTIs. Actually, I had a really complex UTI case where it was like every week for months, like almost 12 months, which I can imagine would have just been so painful.
Oh, they can be debilitating, and especially if they're in that recurrent nature.
Yeah, the client that I had like was nervous every time she had to go to the bathroom, and she was nervous if she was out and about or had an event where she'd be drinking alcohol. It's like that takes over your whole life.
Yeah, you're basically dictated by your urethra.
That's what we should title the episode. Are you dictated by your urethra?
And so in terms of talking about UTIs, like most of us know the basics in terms of hygiene, in terms of weaning after sex, you know, those sorts of things, dehydration that can impact or increase your risk of UTIs. But I think, you know, it's important to reiterate those facts and then also talk about it when it's not clearing, when it's not that once off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's well known that women are more prone to UTIs than men, but perhaps we don't know why. And it can be so frustrating because up to, well, approximately like 150 million people experience UTIs each year, which is wild. And up to 60% of women have at least one UTI in their life. And while there are a few reasons for women being more prone to UTIs, one of the biggest factors is that women have a shorter urethra than men do. So as a result, there's less distance for pathogens to travel to reach the bladder and cause havoc. So, gosh, structurally, we're just...
Yeah,
we've got
I know.
The shortest straw, don't we?
Literally. but if you're a visual learner, even having a look, you know, when you think about the urethra, it's going to have the involvement of the whole penis from the tip of the penis all the way up. Whereas in female bodies, you don't have that. I can't even think of another word, but shaft essentially. And also the urethra is, and it's going to, the longer the length, the harder it is for that bacteria to climb. Whereas in the female body, it can just go straight up, and it's so close to contaminated areas such as the anus, such as the vagina.
Exactly. So aside from the basic things like urinating after sexual activity and staying hydrated and wiping front to back and avoiding harsh chemicals and things in that area, one of the things that I actually wanted to talk about today was the microbiome. I don't know if this is where you saw the episode going.
Well, let's go there.
I think like almost every topic we talk about, I reckon I could bring it back to the microbiome no matter where it is in the body. But there's just some interesting research looking at the state of the microbiome and therefore the risk of UTIs. So essentially, if we talk about the vaginal microbiome, it's to be lactobacillus dominant. And what that does is it lowers the pH and creates this nice, healthy, acidic environment where common urinary tract pathogens, such as E. coli, which is the most common, cannot grow. So we know that the microbiome plays a big role. And there was this interesting study out of the US where women who had experienced at least one UTI in the past 12 months were given like a standard antimicrobial treatment, but then they were randomized to receive either a probiotic or a placebo for 5 days and then once weekly for 10 weeks. And what the researchers found was that the use of these vaginal probiotics improved the microorganisms inside the vagina and significantly reduce the chance of further UTIs by like 50%.
Which is massive because that's the biggest thing. You take your antibiotics, which is really important when you're dealing with a
Oh,
UTI
yeah.
because you don't want that to go up to the kidneys. You don't want that to travel. But something as simple as a specific strain of Lactobacillus, Reuteri, was it? Or.
Well, there's a few different ones. Cryspartis is
Yeah.
heavily researched, but I think that the point you're trying to make there leads into my next point, which is that it's probably best to check the vaginal microbiome to
Yeah.
see your
What's its
dominant
state?
species, what the
Yeah.
breakdown is of the beneficial bacteria, and then you can get even more specific with your treatment because we will know exactly what your dominant species is. So we could go in with Cryspartis or Reuteri or whatever your dominant species is and really support that environment.
And when we're sort of talking about that micro or vaginal microbiome, it plays such a big role all throughout like menstrual cycle, like intimacy. And E. coli is not necessarily a bad guy always. It's just when it's not when it's over dominated, it can create the infections.
Yeah. Have
Yeah.
you seen anyone complain of UTIs around ovulation? Like, have you seen a hormonal link in clinic?
Oh yeah, like especially when like either post-ovulation or like when estrogen's low. But I feel like a lot of my clients would either be when they're transitioning off like a contraception or going on a contraception and in pregnancy. And now I'm thinking about it, menopause as well.
Yeah, it's like almost, yeah,
Okay,
several times
everyone,
throughout the menstrual
everyone.
cycle. And also, if you're trying to conceive, and also if you're pregnant, and also if you're perimenopausal or menopausal. Yeah, it's like, so there's a hormonal link, right? And what I've seen, so I've seen a couple of people get UTIs around ovulation specifically. And I thought, okay, that's really interesting. I need to look into this. And so I think that there's a few theories as to why this happens. And I thought I'd bring it up because chances are probably someone that listens to this, aside from your mom and my mom, might have experienced a UTI around ovulation. So, I mean, when you ovulate, you make your good levels of estrogen and progesterone, right? And these hormones, I mean, there's many other things that play into libido, but if you have more libido around ovulation, then potentially you could be having more sexual activity. And the more sexual activity, if you don't have the hygiene right, or if the microbiome isn't well supported, then that can increase the risk of UTIs. But also, ovulation mucus is more alkaline. So if there already is this intravaginal reservoir of UTI bacteria, they may gain an opportunity at this time to thrive, which I think is really interesting. We also know that estrogen and histamine can fluctuate at this time, and that can drive irritation and inflammation, which can then increase the risk of UTIs or aggravate the symptoms.
Yeah, because all of that tissue, and even, as you were saying, like libido, it doesn't have to be male, female. It can be anything. It can be
Yeah.
self-pleasure, anything that's sort
Yeah.
of going to be adding contamination, and I say that in the nicest way, but
Yeah.
something else that's going to be there, and also that can either engorge that area, create friction with the different organs like the urethra, the vagina, and then increase secretions that throw off the vaginal pH.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people like simplify UTIs, but it can be quite simple in its approach and treatment, particularly if it's an acute UTIs. But UTIs that are ongoing, they're chronic, people experience them month after month or several times in a year. The question really is what's underlying here? Like what's causing this to be reoccurring? Even things like, gosh, tight pelvic floor muscles play a role. So that's where seeing a like women's health physiotherapist can be really useful.
Yeah, things that you wouldn't sort of expect to be contributing factors. But if that is happening to you month on month or cyclically or randomly, then it's worth having another opinion about what's going on, because you can't, well, you know, I guess some people do, but you can't just have that, take an antibiotic, let it go. Is it the same infection? Is it a brand new infection? There's got to be a certain level of investigation there.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest problem with that approach is that, you know, at some point, particularly if these are chronic, you're going to become resistant to the treatment that you've been given. And eventually, it may not in all cases, but it might not work at some point. And then what are you going to do? So that's where, because absolutely antibiotics have their place. I mean, the symptoms of UTIs can be so debilitating. The pain.
I took myself to ER once with a UTI. You? Yeah, because it was that bad.
What did you think was happening? Or did you know it was a UTI?
I was young and
I'm dying.
It got to that point where it was late at night and I started to wee blood, because basically what's happening is that your bladder starts to create these uric acid crystals, and weeing them out is like shards of crystals, which
shards of glass.
Yeah, and it's so painful, and you're getting like the smallest amount of wee and it's tinged with blood. And the risk of further up infection or kidney infection. I think they call it, like in the medical industry, like the honeymooners infection. Because
so romantic.
It can be absolutely painful, excruciatingly painful.
I'm not married yet, but I really don't envision that being my honeymoon. Like, I want cocktails on the beach. Actually, it'd be great if Stephen wasn't even there, to be honest. Like, if I could just lay up in the sun with a book and
that's
with no
a
one
holiday.
Talking to me.
Not a honeymoon.
Yeah, well, maybe because I've done it all a bit backwards, that my idea of a honeymoon is actually just a solo holiday.
Relax. But usually if you present to your GP or the hospital with an infection, they will do a urine sample and they will test for which bacteria it is, and most of the time it is E. coli. But like you said, those more persistent ones, it can be different types of E. coli. It can be different bacteria, depending on what you may be resistant to or what may be in that lining of the bladder wall.
So, look, I think when it comes to, I mean, one of the biggest questions is, what can I take? What can I do? And while I wish I could say, yep, here's what we do, you know, you can do D-mannos, you can do probiotics, you can do this regime of cranberry. It's not always that straightforward. Like, sometimes you can catch it early with a bit of cranberry juice. Great, if that works. But, you know, often my first thought is, okay, well, let's test the microbiome. here's some things to do acutely to improve the symptoms, but let's actually get to the bottom of it, so to speak, and figure out what is causing, particularly if it's recurrent UTIs, what's causing that and prevent that from happening long term.
Yeah, and so if somebody was listening and they're in that situation of dealing with recurrent infections, I would definitely, next time you're symptomatic, present to a GP or like a women's health clinic to get a urine sample to make sure that what you're dealing with is E. coli. Once you have that sort of sample back, then we can know, okay, is it just basically that? But then, you know, that's where naturopaths come into play as well. And we do a
Not
whole...
Not to plug Hormone Health Studio, but step number two is to...
Who's asking about your... intimacy, you know, history, who's asking about your microbiome, who's asking about what supplements you're taking, you know, could it be due to endometriosis, because endo's on the urethra. If it's happening at that, exactly, is it happening at that recurrent rate where you do need some further investigations?
Anyway, I hope this is helpful. I actually would love to hear from anyone that's experienced UTIs, recurrent UTIs, acute UTIs, what helped. I kind of want to hear your journey.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
If you liked it, leave us a review and follow us on socials. We'd love to hear from you.